Some of you may have read in recent times about the arrival of crystal meth on our shores, which is a worrying development, I have to say, given that like there aren't enough drugs already around, floating around in Dublin. But anyway, to talk about this and other matters, other related matters, I have Tony Gagan, who's the director of Merchants Quay Ireland, on the line. Good morning, Tony.
Hiya, Pat. Good morning,
Am I right in saying that the recent mention of crystal meth, I mean, it's just an, it's yet another, it's not the first time that it's appeared?
Yeah, no, there was a significant enough seizure of it there. You know, the Gardaí asked, you know, put a price tag of $250,000 on it. So it was certainly a significant enough...
industrial enough level.
Yeah, so it would seem that it certainly was for, you know, supply, that it wasn't somebody bringing it in for their personal use. It has been one of a number of seizures. Now, not huge seizures, but notwithstanding that, the concern is, does it constitute a trend, and is it going to reflect on the street and on behaviour on the street? Now, certainly, I know, talking to the other voluntary agencies and ourselves, we've heard a little bit about it, but not much. It still wouldn't be by far and away the main drug of choice.
Sure.
By any means, but notwithstanding that, certainly it's something you'd be worried about.
Sure.
A bit like the kind of head shop drugs, Pat, in that it's a fairly erratic type drug, crystal meth, in that it's an amphetamine based drug, so people get into difficulties on it very, very quickly. You know, it takes
sure.
a huge toll on the body quickly, much more so than opiates would. They'd be a much more slow burn effect on the body, you know.
So the things like crystal meth would be more, I'm surprised that would be more damaging perhaps in the short term even than heroin.
Yeah, the reason behind that, Pat, is because people can only take so much heroin and then they actually fall asleep or overdose. You can't get much more harm than overdose.
Of course.
But notwithstanding that, with people generally will take heroin and then they become extremely sedated. So they will tend to, what they call themselves, goof out or go
to sleep.
Whereas when people are taking crystal meth, it's a stimulant, so they're up there, they stay awake, you know what I mean, for days at a time, buzzing around. But that takes huge wear and tear on the body, you know, in terms of the heart, the kidneys, the lungs,
sure.
all of that.
And psychologically, I would imagine, if you're not sleeping.
Yeah, it's like sleep deprivation, and people become very agitated and can be quite behaviourally difficult to manage.
Yeah. Are we as a society in the field that you work in, Tony, are we geared up for the arrival of a drug such as that?
Well, I suppose at the end of the day, Pat, a drug is a drug.
Yeah.
And, we do have drug services in place. And if people are, it takes a bit of an attitude and a shift, maybe just to, if you're accustomed to dealing with heroin users, to start to deal with cocaine users or crystal meth users, because the needs are slightly different. As I say, they're often more immediate. There'll be more maybe immediate medical consequences.
Sure.
Or even substitution therapy available for drugs like crystal meth or cocaine or amphetamine-based drugs that really are talking about more psychological support, very short-term, maybe medical interventions.
Sure.
But we are geared up to it. But having said that, we're not meeting the needs that are there already.
We still
have issues around access to treatment right around the city. Like, people are often shocked when they hear that, you could be waiting, 6, 7, 8 months to get access to treatment in parts of Dublin.
That's,
if you try to get into an inpatient detox, we still only have, as you say, about 30 beds for an estimated 20,000 heroin users. So that's the kind of,
the landscape, as it were.
Yeah.
And on that point of the difference between these type of amphetamine-based or the ones that give, an extreme... the stimulants as opposed to opiates being more calm, having a more calming effect. I know in the opiate market, I mean, at least you have the substitute methadone to help people wean themselves away from the opiate. How does that work when you're talking in terms of cocaine or a crystal meth or amphetamine addiction?
Well, they don't prescribe any substitution when people are trying to come off crystal meth or cocaine. And the reason behind that is that, you know, there's a couple of levels to addiction. There's the kind of physical level of addiction where your body is, you know, addicted to the substance.
Sure.
And that if it's taken away, your body will become sick, you go into withdrawals. Now, cocaine and amphetamines don't have that same level of propensity of physical addiction that opiates have, you know.
It's more of a psychological addiction.
It's more a psychological addiction, a compulsion to use the drug.
Okay.
Know? And that the use is driven by that sort of compulsion, you know.
Okay, hence the need for the psychological supports rather than...
Now, they will often, you know, prescribe short-term tranquilizers for a couple of days, maybe just to ease the agitation, because people do become extremely agitated coming off these drugs.
Okay.
As you say, they've often gone long periods of time without sleep, you know, and it is a very compulsive type drug, you know, or the feelings associated with it. That's how people describe it as being, you know, the compulsion to take the drug, to just think about the drug all the time, you know, and to get caught into that cycle, you know.
Are there different personality traits involved, or is this a stupid question? If it is, let me know. But are there different personality traits involved in people who would, as their drug of choice is say, cocaine or something from the stimulant family, or something from the something from the opiate family. I know people sort of work across the full spectrum at times, but as the absolute drug of choice, the drug of addiction, are there different types of personalities that go with each drug?
Well, I'm not sure that there are. You know, funnily enough, on a more international level, opiates will be more associated with Southern Europe, and amphetamines will be more associated with Northern Europe, like the Nordic countries, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, places like that. They, you know, amphetamine use would be much more prevalent up there than it would in the rest of Europe, you know. Then you do see both in the States, for example, in North America, there'd be a lot of cocaine use, obviously. Now, some of that might be geographical as well, because, of course, you're very close to South America, which would be the main, you know, ground for, you know, for cocaine.
So there's the question of availability.
The question of availability. But also there's a question, I think what you see here in Ireland is that there's different cohorts of people using drugs, and drugs carry baggage with them. Like when you say the word heroin, you know, people automatically nowadays, you know, would have a, you know, it has a strong negative connotation. Whereas when you sort of say cocaine, for example, it doesn't have the same level of negative connotation.
Absolutely,
as heroin, nor do amphetamines. You know, if you talked about amphetamine or crystal meth, people probably wouldn't know what you're talking about. So they wouldn't be carrying that level of baggage, or they wouldn't have that level of
negativity attached to them
about it. So consequently, they're more inclined to experiment with it and try it. And anyone can become addicted to drugs, same way as anyone can become addicted to alcohol.
Sure.
The difference tends to be then about when people try to move on, that people that start from a higher base, and by that I mean if people have a strong family network around them, you know, good support, if they have, you know, education and a job and things like that, often it's easier to move on because they have that around them, you know?
Yeah.
And if they don't, then it becomes much, much more difficult to move, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So they're the kind of factors now, which, you know, are bringing it back to the kind of, you know, socioeconomic factors.
Sure.
You know, like, it's not coincidence that, you know, problem drug use is concentrated in the poorest parts of the city, you know.
And
that's not to say that, you know, rich people can't get addicted.
Sure, they can
and do, but they're often able to take geographical cures that they can go away in a holiday for.
Away from it.
They'll get it.
And
know,
is the recession is. Does is there any indication that the recession has increased tendency, the move to drugs as to alleviate problems, or is it?
Well, it's probably hard to know really just yet. Where we've seen the recession impact most in terms of services, you know, for like ourselves, it would be on the homeless side. Where you know, just for example, we did our annual report there last week. You know, the food, our meal provision, you know, was up by, you know, just over 25%. I think we provided something like 58,000 meals last year, you know, which is a huge amount. And again, you know, we would take a lot of pride in that we try to provide good, nutritious, quality food for people. You know, we open at 7 in the morning and have a breakfast for people sleeping rough. But notwithstanding that, you wouldn't come to somewhere like Merchants Quay for your food unless you really needed to. And then, of course, there is a crossover. That's where it might happen, Pat, in that there is a crossover between drugs and homelessness. Some people become homeless because their drug use or their alcohol use is getting out of hand. They get into difficulties. But equally, if people become homeless, they're moving in that milieu as well, and often as a mechanism for coping with it, they get caught up in drugs
or drink.
Yeah.
So, and Tony, just lastly, is there any, in terms of just the overall area that you work in, are there any significant developments or trends of late?
Well, I think the biggest trend we've seen has been that increased demand for services, that particularly on the homeless side and on the drug side. Now, we've nearly 600 new users presenting at our needle exchange, which is still
significant.
Still talking about 10, a minimum of kind of 10 new injectors every week presenting and all the misery that goes with that for the person and their families and the communities that they live in, etc. So,
and would that apply across nationalities as well, Tony?
Yeah, we're seeing I think in our food service, for example, or across all our services, I think we've about 30 something different nationalities would attend. You know, now that would vary from Chinese to Spanish to whatever, but I think the biggest group that we would see would probably be Eastern European people, and they have no access, or the vast majority of them have no access to any social welfare benefits or anything like that because of this new habitual residency condition whereby people have to be here 2 years before they have access to it. So there's a lot of people out there that came over here maybe looking for work or looking, you know, like Irish people did in the past, looking for a new start.
Found themselves stuck.
And find themselves stuck, exactly.
Yeah.
And that is a trend, and it is difficult, not being able to access them to any level of safety net beyond provide some food for them and whatever support we can.
Basic stuff. Okay, Tony, look, we're going to leave it there. Listen, it's a pleasure to talk to you again.
All right, thank you.
And thanks for taking the time to speak with us this morning. Okay, take care.